Blog Talk Radio.
Bye-bye.
Blessed souls, here it comes, the higher inner frequency of soul class number 389, whose presence is divine in our semi-impromptu humble efforts today. We're joined live by our Rambam student teacher and disseminator of the teachings, Rambam, Dennis Ryan. Good morning, Dennis.
Boker tov, Don. How are you?
Baruch Hashem, thank God. And we had a couple of glitches. I know we're doing this kind of impromptu, Dennis, so that's why I was not able to call you. I'm glad you were proactive and took the approach to call into the program. Before we go on, Dennis, I just want to remind everyone that we're broadcasting live right now. Today is September 4th, 2014, and we plan to vibe out on elucidations, discussions, and comments relating to Shekhinah, Divine Presence, live from Turtle Island, a.k.a. the USA, unifying souls. Actually, our presentation will be rooted in a Hasidic Maamar discourse delivered by the Lubavitcher Rebbe in the Hebrew calendar date year of 5711, corresponding to the English calendar date of 1951. Being that we're making the show semi-impromptu, probably this is just you and I, Dennis, so that's okay, but if you are listening, suddenly, blessed souls, you can call in at 347-838-8669. Now we're going to ask you, please, to meditate upon the following verses from the prophet Joel, Navi Yoel, from chapter 3, verses 1 and 2, quote, "And it shall come to pass afterwards that I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh, and your sons and daughters shall prophesy, your elders shall dream dreams, your young men shall see visions, and even upon the slaves and the maidservants in those days will I pour out my spirit. Meanwhile, may the Creator bless you and your family peacefully and pleasantly." And as I think the last time we did a part of whose presence is divine, you weren't there, so I'm going to review just one concept and then lead in, and then of course we'll be turning to you for comments, questions, and concerns. That we left off last week talking about the service of Abraham, Avraham Avinu, Avraham our father, whose name was changed from Abram to Abraham, or Avram to Avraham, the Avraham meaning, of according to the oral Torah tradition, as transmitted to us by Moses, is that Av Hamon Goyim, meaning the father of many nations, not just on a physical lineage level, although there are many peoples that can trace their lineage to him. You just have to go into the book of Genesis to see that he had more than just one mate, soulmate, being that Sarah. He also had Hagar, who actually is also known as Keturah. But as well, he has many spiritual descents, as witnessed by the faiths of Israel, Christianity, and of course, our cousins, the Arabic and non-Arabic Islamic faith devotees. So we want to just review a primary mode that, so to speak, epitomized what was the service of Abraham, as mentioned succinctly in the book of Genesis, chapter 21, verse 33. Abraham planted an eshel, which is a type of tree, in Beersheba, or Bar Shava, which is in the south of Israel, and there he proclaimed the name of God, God of the universe. Again, you can learn more about that by going to Genesis 21, verse 33. Now, the Talmudic tractate Sota, on page 10, side B, and Rashi, elucidating upon that, as well as commentary by the Midrash Rabbah on Genesis chapter 54, explains the following scenario to help us understand what was the epitome of Abraham's service to the Creator as a vehicle for spreading Creator's kindness in the world. So what is this Eshel? The sage Reish Lachish said, this teaches that he made an orchard and planted in it many types of fruit trees to benefit the wayfarers. The sage Rabbi Nechemiah said he built an inn for wayfarers for lodging, food, and drink. And as it pertains to the verse, and he proclaimed the name of God, God of the universe, Reish Lachish said, do not read it as he proclaimed, rather read it as he caused to call. This teaches that our forefather Abraham caused the name of the Holy One, Blessed Be He, to be called by the mouth of every passerby. How was this accomplished? After the wayfarers ate and drank, they stood up to bless Abraham. He would say to them, quote, was it then of my food that you eat, you ate from the food of the God of the universe? Rather, you should thank, praise, and bless he who spoke and caused the universe to come into being. They would ask, what shall we say? He said to them, quote, blessed is the God of the universe from whose bounty we have eaten, end of quote. So Abraham taught all people to recognize and call in the name of God, God of the universe. And Dennis, here, there's nothing really ethnocentric in Abraham's approach, which I think ultimately is an instruction to us. In true dissemination of knowledge of godliness, there's really no room for ethnocentricity, but rather there should be inclusivity of all members of the human family population or family connection experience. Your comments, questions, or concerns about what I just shared?
Well, I can understand the inclusivity of the subject matter here, Don, but you got to remember, in certain areas, only certain people walked around there. You didn't have people coming from all over the world to go to Abraham's garden, who, by the way, to me, I think that's like a parallel to the Garden of Eden. God tried it, and it didn't work. Abraham said, well, let me take his kernel of an idea and show people what happens when you have a place like that who welcomes all travelers and is worried about them. So we call that reaching out, but that was really, truly reaching out. So reaching out with goodness. Goodness works. And I guess Abraham, our father, he tried it and it worked. And by the way, Abraham, all the different names you had for him, we could have solved that here by giving him a Social Security number. That would have eliminated all that problem of how to pronounce his name or what version his name is in. But that's besides the point. But to me, it's a parallelism to the Garden of Eden. And the man said, I am big and important, but there's somebody who's bigger and more important than me, and that's called God.
True. I think that, you know, you mentioned something that God or Creator placed before us, I'm paraphrasing you, the Garden of Eden, and didn't work. Well, it would have worked if they had followed succinctly the plan of the Creator, and Abraham, I think, was trying to, in some way, bring people back to, as you mentioned, Dennis, that Garden of Eden perspective of being given bounty freely, as Adam and Eve and whoever, all the other animals of that time were given free bounty to partake of. Of course, the animals, I never heard of, there's no obligation upon animals to praise Creator, but certainly it was upon Adam and Eve, Adam and Chava, to give thanks and praises, and they were eventually supposed to have reared their family in the garden. Even it didn't work out because, unfortunately, they extended themselves into a realm they shouldn't have, which means they did the wrong thing. But I get what you're saying, and I think that's really basically, I think that's a primary, that's an axiomatic mode of consciousness that, you know, I wish I could connect to constantly, to try to bring people back into the fold of being conscious of the bounty of the Creator, to give thanks to Him, to the exclusion of the differences that can occur among peoples and cultures. And I don't like to use the term races because, according to the Bible, there is no such term as race in the Hebrew language, aside from the fact that people can run in a race. Dennis,
and it's called the human race. And the Garden of Eden didn't work out because people didn't want it, not God. Sure. God tried very hard, but people sort of rejected it and went about their own way.
True. Dennis, we have a surprise call-in guest. If you'd like to identify your name and where you're calling from, we're pleased to have you partake in our humble efforts this morning. Caller, can you please identify yourself? Okay, the person dropped. I guess he was a little shy or she was a little shy. Okay, I guess, Dennis, we were a little too forward with them. Anyway, so going on, Blessed Souls and Dennis, So this mode of divine service, which it was the epitome of kindness, was a mode that would go from generation to generation until six generations later, a direct descendant of Abraham would emerge upon the world community scene, namely the Levite prophet Moses. Now, you might ask yourself, this is a show about Shekhinah, divine presence. So what is the discussion, historical discussion about the first generation, which we talked about in the previous presentation, whose presence is divine part 8, and now we're continuing this discussion in whose presence is divine part 9. Why, when we're trying to elucidate on matters of the divine presence, Shekhinah, why are we bringing in the idea of talking about a first-generation mode of service, Abraham, which is the aspect of kindness, and now Moses, who is six generations later, also as identified as the seventh generation in relation to the first generation, the generation of Abraham. We take note, blessed souls, Moses did not pick for himself to be the leader of the seventh generation after the seventh generation of Abrahamic or Abraham's consciousness. However, plucking out from this teaching from the Lubavitcher Rebbe in 1951, that he wanted us to know as well that our generation, meaning all of us alive today, is actually in the category of what is known as the seventh generation in relation to the first generation, and that first generation was over 200 years ago, namely the generation of Admor HaZaken, Rav Shneur Zalman of Liadi, the first Chabad Rebbe. And we also mentioned last week, there is a teaching from the inner dimension, the oral Torah traditions of Israel, that Kol Shaviv and Chaviv, that in the cycles of generations, the seventh generation is considered to be cherished, of Alocho Chaviv and Shriven. But that doesn't mean it can only be one in every seven generations, namely the seventh generation is cherished, meaning individuals within each generation can in fact achieve this level of being cherished if their actions, thoughts, and speech are in tune and sync to the Creator's plan, which we humbly recommend people can learn about more by learning the Torah, the oral written traditions of how to conduct our lives. And then he or she, and we mentioned she is just as well as he, can be zocha to be receiving Ruach HaKodesh, divine inspiration, something which is, so to speak, in the direction of prophecy, but not quite yet that. Although, again, as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, there is a prophecy in the book of Joel in chapter 3, verses 1 through 2, that the Spirit of the Most High soon will be poured upon all peoples during the Messianic generation. So, again, with that being said, one might say, well, that one's lot has been cast to be in a certain generation. But again, we want to mention again, that doesn't really fly in the face of other teachings in Torah. Whereas again, if people, any human being, a man or woman, Jew or Gentile, is willing to dwell upon the plane of consciousness of reflecting within themselves and then hopefully sharing what they have experienced or learned about with other people within this creation, Dennis, a pristine awareness of the fact that there is in fact divine intervention, that in fact there is a guidance emanating solely from Creator, and Creator has certain expectations towards the human family experience, which then can manifest, again, through a type of consciousness which is connected to Shekhinah, where it seems to be, while things are quite natural and everything is apiteva, according to the rules of nature, there is something permeating and guiding the rules of nature, meaning Mother Nature is being guided by, not by her own whims, but by the Almighty Creator, and Mother Nature or Mother Earth or whatever you want to call it, or Father Ocean, are merely axes in the hands of the woodchopper to hew out the uniqueness of this creation, totally in sync with the Creator. It's upon us as human beings to get in sync with the Creator's plan for this creation. Dennis, I know you have what to say.
What happens, I think, the mocking of the generations or the delineation of the generations that you have gone through, you've given us a first-class testament to the eternal presence of God on earth, because you're saying throughout history, all these people recognized that and continued that as one mind, that God is upon us. So here you are giving testament to a long period of time, and that should be, I'm simplifying it to the extent that that should show that people honor God, welcome God, and will honor and love their fellow man regardless of the time period.
Mm-hmm. Dennis, also I just want to point out, when we talk about the seventh generation, we're not trying to promote some sort of numerology as much as we see from the Bible itself. It talked about a cycle of 7 days, and the culmination of the seventh day was that Creator himself, again, Creator as Creator understands what it is, and through Creator's ultimate infinite wisdom, that we should get some sort of transmission and knowledge of the fact that Creator rested upon the seventh day and called that day the day of the Sabbath. So there is something to be said about the idea of seven. It's connected to the idea of menucha, of tranquility, of inner peace. And inner peace, again, is a concept that we will strongly assert is connected with the idea of the divine presence. Every person emanates some level within themselves that aspect of tranquility, that aspect of rest, that sense of inner being and inner peace. However, it's just that we get tested in life to see, can we maintain that inner tranquility, Dennis? And I'd like to hear what you have to say about this idea of maintaining that inner tranquility, whether one is an observer of the seventh-day sabbatical day, or one is just trying to find that inner peace on an everyday basis.
Well, numbers are a human convention. To me, I personally don't see God using numbers, but humans like to do that because we have to keep order and control in our lives. So that's why we have a week with 7 days in it, and we're told that you got to reserve one day to honor God because he gave you the other 6 days and you've been enjoying it. So you have to respect him on one other day of the week. So the purpose of this, behind this, is that humans must be reminded that we are not alone. We are not living here all by ourselves. God's presence is always with us, and we must periodically recognize that. So when we start using numbers as conventions or reminders that we must do things on an orderly basis, things work out because humans can understand it. We can't understand the whole spiritual world of God, but we can certainly understand the purpose for each day of the week.
True. Now, I just want to mention this. Yes, humans do use numbers, but, you know, Moses was conveying that which he was told by the Creator because Moses is the one, according to our tradition, is the one, in fact, who wrote down even all the events of Genesis, which occurred a couple thousand plus years before his coming into this world. But the point is, again, is not so much, okay, we do, for the sense of structure, which I know from being a former certified therapeutic crisis instructor or intervention instructor, that, for instance, adolescents who are troubled, they need to have some sort of structure, because structure gives us a focus. For instance, I'm working under the structure that I have to be at work at 12 o'clock. So all of my activities are sort of compressed together so that after this program, I'll have a little breakfast. Maybe I'll do a little exercise. I'll have a little breakfast. I'll get on my bike. I'll consider what my things I have to do for this day. Otherwise, if I have the day off, more likely than not, generally speaking, just from my own personal experience, I am less organized and I'm less efficient in terms of my daily activities. So we were given a seventh day to rest, or if we think, or perhaps every human being could consider, if 1/7 of their time is devoted, not including one's sleeping hours, because certainly we sleep more than 1/7 of our week, I believe. We certainly do if we sleep 5 to 8 hours a week. That we can in fact find that our perceptions and our internalization of teachings about godliness become much more precious to us. And not only just a matter of rote, antiquated statutes, but something which become living and vivifying means of taking us to the next level of our consciousness. Dennis?
Well, humans are restless, and they need order and control, because we do have a free will, so we can make choices. But without order and control, most humans would be bumping into each other unless they had something to do. So we have to bring purpose to the order and control to their body and mind. So that way, they're organized. If they're organized, then they can realize the organization that God put on the earth between, you mentioned it, Mother Nature before, and it still goes on. There's order to nature. Can humans accept order to their lives? Well, you can, I believe, if you use God as a crutch. Yes, you need help. God will help you.
Now we're going to go into our final installment today, Dennis. It might at first sound ethnically specific, but I'm going to explain why it's not really ethnic specific after I read the following paragraph. And, of course, I would like your comments, questions, concerns about this matter. Now, regarding each and every Israelite, a question may arise, which each one of us hopefully will internalize, namely, and this is one of the teachings that came from this Hasidic discourse, this Maamar from the Lubavitcher Rebbe, namely, when will our actions, i.e., when will our actions reach the quantity and quality of endeavor that were exemplified by our patriarchs Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Israel? And as well, we must recall, whatever we can accomplish still, we cannot stand in the place of these great ones, our patriarchs. But I wanted to point out, this is a very specific point, although this might seem to be just Israelite specifically directed, the fact of the matter, according to the strictest mode of the Jewish law, that at the time Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Israel lived, they, especially when Abraham and Jacob, Israel, were living outside the land of Canaan, which would eventually become the land of Israel, but also could apply to Yitzhak, Isaac as well, all of them were in the category still of being only obligated to keep the seven universal commandments. So every human being, blessed souls, can meditate and think about in order to become more aware of, ultimately, God's presence, as we can call it, Shekhinah, that it takes the preparation, the preparatory process of purifying one's thoughts, one's speech, one's action to be in sync with what Creator wants from us. And just very quickly, we can say that one of the ways that we can prepare ourselves in the direction of what these men exemplified was that these men did not hate other human beings just for the sake of hating. They were not jealous of other human beings for the sake of being jealous. Neither did they enter into unhealthy and overextended means of competition with their fellow human beings. Now, you might say they had an advantage because they weren't living with 7 billion people. But let's remember, blessed souls, at that time, too, they were exposed to levels of cruelty, which unfortunately we have seen some mimicking of that type of cruelty in the modern world, unfortunately, with this ISIS crisis and other, and I'm not. It's not just cruelty from exemplified by the fact by Muslim extremists, Islamic extremists. There's also been cruelty carried out by Jews. There's been cruelty carried out by Christians. There's been cruelty carried out by Rastafarians. There's been cruelty carried out by Hindus and Yazidis. All different types of people under the aegis or the protective coat of arms, as they might want to say. To carry out acts of perfidy against other human beings. But no, blessed souls, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob made themselves vehicles for prophecy, for accessing the divine presence, Shekhinah, via purifying themselves from, as an example, just one small example, of jealousy and hatred and unneeded forms of competition. Dennis, your take on this matter before we end our program.
We are all children of God. No particular group has a lock or a sole purview of good. That's redistributed among all people because it becomes personal. When you want to be good or bad, that's your choice. You normally don't do it as a group, but it's easier to accept or rationalize if the person next to you says, yes, let's do something bad. But that's the human way. But the other part is, even those who are evil or bad realize after a period of time that they have to change. And that's where God comes in. However, you mentioned several times that there's been teachers over the period of history that have told us, instructed us. But they were making universal instructions. To think that they were just helping their neighbor, they would speak to anybody that was passing by, anybody that was around that could hear them. So they weren't just talking in the ears of a particular group. That's why, and it proves, that their words are still valid today because their motives were positive. So therefore, we must understand what was written in the past and what humans have contributed in the past is still valid today.
Beautiful, Dennis. And by with that being said, I think all those wise teachers throughout the generations for all nations sharing godly revelations were certainly acting out under the code of arms of by the grace of God. And with that being said, we're going to the Chen Elokim. With that being said, we're going to end now with our flagship ending music provided by our good friend David Dome, who'll get back home with his song, By the Grace of God Go I. But before we turn to David Dome's wonderful music, I just want to remind everyone, you can be good, you've got to be good. Why do I say such things? Why do I, Danzus Yerubin, your local cyberspace Torah activist, share such viewpoints? Because Ateva Hatov Lehetiv, it is the nature of the good to do good. The Creator is the source of all goodness. He implanted in our nature this ability to access the Shekhinah, the divine presence, if we want to. I know it's a struggle. I'll be the first one before anyone to say it is hard, but if we take it on a moment by moment, minute by minute, hour by hour, day by day, week by week, month by month, year by year, progression, and have mercy upon ourselves when we slip up and fall in the mud of our own disconnected consciousness, or we call it meichen de katnus, smallness of mind at those points where we fall into the Ruach Shtus, the spirit of folly, where we do something which we're not supposed to do. There's always the wonderful opportunity of teshuva, of returning to the Creator. But none of this is possible without, by the grace of God, go I, as David Dome will now sing for us. But before we do that again, I want to remind everyone, may we proceed, all of us together, as one human family experience, to go by the grace of God, go I, in a way of ahava chad, one love, gore lechad, one destiny, kumon of all of us, b'darchi shalom, in a peaceful darchi nom, in a pleasant way, laham sheikh, to be continued, bez Hashem Yisbrech, to be continued with the help of the Most High. Take care, everyone.